This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Mead, and I'm your host for the Golden Age of Radio. Sunday nights at 7 p.m. here on WBAI, presenting the finest in radio's history, comedy, drama, mysteries, science fiction. Won't you join me Sunday nights at 7 for the Golden Age of Radio? Only here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
I hope you feel.
This is WBAI in New York City. We're at 99.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And in just a few moments, or actually it is now time for Radio Unnameable with Bob Fass. And we'll have some guests tonight, among whom are Steve Ben Israel, who is already here, and another guest yet to arrive. So stay tuned. We'll play some promos. Where are the promos? Okay. Let's see. Oh, Earth Day. Earth Day, right? Let's play that. So you just click on it, and it should go, yes? Okay. No, that's the news.
Good evening.
Oops, we don't want the news. Thank you. To be filed.
Earth Day is Thursday, April 22nd. Come, join us for the 4th annual World Peace Earth Day benefit event, Celebrating Our Planet, Healing Our Heart. A gathering of special presenters will honor our planet with music, inspirational talks, meditation, and vibrational healing. That's Thursday, April 22nd from 7:30 sharp to 10 p.m. at the Meta Center, 214 West 29th Street, 16th floor. Doors open at 7 p.m. For tickets and information, go to wetheworld.org/APR22 or call 212-222-5432.
If this were 5 o'clock on a Thursday, that music would mark the beginning of Behind the News. But it's not, so instead I'm here to invite you to join me, Doug Henwood, as I comment on the economic news and interview a wide variety of guests, authors, activists, think tankers, and even the occasional Nobel Prize winner. Economics and politics from New York City to the world, what's happening and what it all means. Behind the News with Doug Henwood, Thursdays from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on WBAI.
Doesn't come.
Were you waiting for me, Dan Malley?
Who's that? Who spoke?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
There isn't much time, Malley. They're coming after you to take you to the chair. Speak quickly. What have you to say?
Just this. For the best in old-time radio thrills, adventure, and comedy, tune in to the Golden Age of Radio, 7 to 9, Sunday nights, right here on WBAI New York.
On Tuesday, April 20th, from 2 to 4 a.m., Sugar in My Bowl will focus on jazz legend Pharoah Sanders, who is highly regarded to the point of reverence by many jazz fans. That's Tuesday, April 20th, from 2 to 4 a.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Hey WBAI listeners, this is Lewis Williams, or Dengan, on The Aliens. We have a special party just for you, the after party for the radio drama series The Aliens. Join our cast, crew, and other WBAI listeners on Sunday, April 25th at 8 p.m. at the famous Lower East Side Luca Lounge, located at 220 Avenue B. That's between 13th and 14th Street. Come down for free gourmet pizza, inexpensive drinks, and great music featured on the show. That's Sunday, 8 p.m., April 25th at Luca Lounge. RSVP to secure a spot or just come on down. To RSVP, visit thealiensseries.com or call 212-209-2800. Again, that number is 212-209-2800. Hey, and don't forget to listen to The Aliens Saturdays at noon.
Stardate 2010.0512. Starship WBAI is approaching the planet Marathon.
How much time do you require?
Could take weeks, sir.
Our mission? To alter time itself and shorten WBAI's annual spring drive.
Mr. Spock has remained in accelerated time, but he might affect repairs to the ship more rapidly.
You can accelerate the thon with an early pledge at our brand new webpage at WBAI.org, so we might sooner return to our award-winning news, public affairs, politics, arts, science, and strange new worlds.
The panel is being recirculated at an incredible speed.
Ship will resume normal operations almost immediately.
We can warp this drive. Make it so with an early pledge at WBAI.org, and our spring drive will go faster than any thon has gone before.
I found it an exhilarating experience.
Accelerating experience. This is WBAI in New York City. My name is Bob Fass. It's Bill Prop over there. And with us this morning is Stephen Israel. And in a bit, we will be joined by David Massengill and Bob Porco. And we'll have some news maybe about the Brooklyn Folk Festival and celebration, the 50th year anniversary, 50 years of Gertie's Folk City. Some people are trying to put together a celebration of Gertie's. Well, let's see. It says there's a piece of tape, sticky tape, over one of the, it says, back Tuesday. Now, what could that mean? At WBAI, it might mean anything. Oh, I see. The CD player that's affiliated with that particular control seems to be among the missing. So we'll have to get by this morning with a mere two CD players. I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be okay. Wouldn't mind if some of you called us at 212-209-2900. And perhaps we'll share some particular insights this morning. I know that there is a community in New York City of musicians that sweeten the atmosphere. You know, where would we be without music? I think maybe that's one of the reasons people got together in cities in the very first place, because of music.
We're also going to be heard on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska this morning. And CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia. 1:30 we'll be joined by WJFF in Jeffersonville. There was a meeting tonight in the city of people who are concerned about the terrible damage that drilling for gas will wreak on the water system of New York City. The aquifer will be poisoned by the chemicals that are pumped into the ground to extract the furtive natural gas. And there was a meeting dealing with that subject tonight. We might get a report from there. And, yes. Remember that for a couple of years we've been talking about the terrible waste in what is called the rubber rooms of the city of New York, where experienced teachers sit and read newspapers, and they're finally doing away with that awful Durance file. You first heard about it, maybe, on Radio Unnameable. We've been talking about it for years. And don't know whether the system that will replace them will be any better, because all of the press releases that I heard made it sound as though the people who were forced to reside in the rubber rooms were criminals who had yet to be convicted. But in many cases, they are experienced teachers who are collecting the highest possible salary and who are on their way toward having a comfortable, more or less, pension and retirement. And these people were often the ones who ended up in the rubber rooms for insubordination or other kinds of easily, I guess the word to use is trumped up charges. I've heard that Fats Waller is going to be honored at the Lincoln Center this coming period. That would be something we would all benefit from. And as I say, please give us a call at
2-1-2-2-0-9-2-9-100. Should take a notion to jump into the ocean. Take nobody's business if I do, 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 do. Rather than persecute me, choose that you would shoot me, cause tain't nobody's business if I do. You can talk, you can rave, they can say awful things about me. I don't care what you say, go on your way if you doubt me. Cause if I go to church on Sunday and head down on Monday, tain't nobody's business if I do. I mean it, I solid mean it.
Colin Moynihan, are you on the line with me now?
Yes, I am.
Colin Moynihan works for the Good Gray New York Times, and he did a piece in today's Times that was buried way down at the bottom of the City Room pieces about an anarchist film fair that was raided. You want to give us...
The folks who were some of the organizers of the film festival were using a space. The festival is scheduled to take place Friday in Manhattan, but they were using a space out in Brooklyn and Greenpoint.
It was going to be at Judson Church. Probably is still going to be at Judson Church.
Yeah, I think they told me it's going to be at Judson and at St. Mark's Church also. Right. So I guess on the east side and on the west side. But apparently they were using this spot out in Greenpoint as kind of a headquarters to edit film and plan. And it's a spot that a lot of people use for a lot of purposes. There are some musicians out there, some artists. And the police visited the place on Tuesday. And, you know, whether or not we could call it a raid, I guess, is sort of dependent on your point of view. If the people in that space feel like it was a raid, I guess I can understand that. But it was not like a classic kind of situation
It ended with a few arrests, didn't it?
It absolutely concluded with a few arrests. That's beyond dispute, yeah. Two of the people in there were arrested. I guess what happened was the police entered the place through an open front door. The people inside said that the police didn't have a warrant. The police say, well, the door was open, and, you know, we thought that, we went into an industrial building, and we thought there might be illegal squatters, is essentially what the police seem to be saying. And, they asked people for ID, and then it appears that they ran those names through their computers and found that two of the young guys there had outstanding warrants for pretty minor offenses.
Littering.
I think drinking in public for one guy. And the other guy told me that his outstanding tickets were drinking in public, and I think maybe urinating in public is what he was saying.
He's an anarchist.
I don't even know if these particular guys are anarchists. I didn't ask them. Some of the people in the space are.
I mean, he's not a serial urinator, is he?
That's a really good question, and I don't know the answer to that. He might be a serial urinator, maybe just not in public. Who knows?
Well, so they were arrested, and the films were not confiscated, but questions were asked about the program and about posters.
Yeah, that's the account that the folks in the art space in Greenpoint told me.
What did the police say?
The police told me that the police. Let me look at my notes here. What the police said was that officers entered to investigate an open door in what appeared to be the common room of an industrial building in an area where there have been complaints of squatters, but the police department could not confirm to me. Yesterday that the people who were arrested had actually been questioned about the flyers, and that's a reference.
Isn't this an art space?
This is the people that are in the space. That's what they call it. They call it an art space.
And who's the landlord, if there is one?
The landlord is a guy whose name I have in my notes that I from the people inside the building. I didn't speak to the landlord. But they showed me receipts that they said they had also showed to the police officers, indicating kind of handwritten receipts, indicating that they paid rent, which they said some of the officers saw those receipts, according to the people inside the art space. They felt that those, carried some weight. I mean, I wasn't there for that part of it.
Well, the festival is tomorrow.
The festival, goes on tomorrow, as far as we know. I don't think that's been changed.
Do you know the names of the people who were arrested or the people who were running the festival? Perhaps if they're listening, they can call and give us some more details.
Well, the names of the two young men who were arrested are, and they were in the street that I reported, John Ludolf.
John what?
Ludolf.
Ludolf?
Ludolf. And the other man was Sherrod Andrews. And, you know, they spent the night in police custody in Brooklyn and then appeared in front of a judge eventually to answer for the fact that they had apparently, you know, not paid their tickets. Both of those guys told me that their charges were eventually dismissed when they made it up in front of the judge. You know, I don't know really that I think Mr. Ludolf is not really directly connected to the festival, actually. I think he just happened to be hanging out in the space. Sherrod Andrews, he may be a little bit more involved with the festival.
Where's it happening?
Pardon?
Where is the festival happening tomorrow night?
Judson and St. Mark's Churches.
Simultaneously?
I don't know. You know, on their website, they probably have the main information.
What is their website, you know?
Anarchist Film Festival.
Your NYC Anarchist Film Fest. Filmfest.org is what we linked to.
Filmfest.org.
With our story.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Colin. How are you getting along at the Times?
Oh, I'm getting along fine. Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you're there.
Thanks.
Talk to you again maybe soon, unless you want to stay on in case some other people call in about it.
Well, it's been a long day for me. I know you like to stay up all night, but I do too sometimes, but sometimes I need rest also.
I have to. I have to listen to this great radio program.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Take care, Colin. Thanks.
Yes, you too. Talk to you later. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
You're on the radio.
Well, hi, Bob. This is Gary. How are you, Bob?
Okay. How are you? Were you involved in that festival, Gary?
Gee whiz, no. I was going to talk to you about a couple of things. One of them was the horrible attacks on the Mexicans in Port Richmond. Last week there was a young Mexican who wound up having his skull fractured. There's been a string of incidents of hate crimes against Mexicans in Port Richmond. And there's some meetings coming up on the 26th and 28th in Port Richmond. MPS 20. Town hall type meetings on this, and there's something else going on, but I want to. Some things you just keep quiet, you know. He is still me, he'll make a lot of noise, you know, when it comes to self defense. Anyway, onward. Meanwhile, you've had this horrible earthquake in China, as everybody knows. And as it turns out, there had already been a concert planned at the Bird's Nest Stadium in Beijing for the 17th. A number of major international artists, musical performers from rock to classical Chinese music, classical Western music, will be performing. And this will be a multimedia extravaganza globally.
Where will this be, Gary?
Well, it's being broadcast on the internet and on cable, you know, CCTV, on the 17th. It had been pre-planned, devoted to ecology and peace. Well, now this terrible earthquake has occurred all of a sudden, and I'm sure the theme will be shifting somewhat in that direction. A number of prominent, you know, well-known rockers and performers were already planned. It's going to be in the Bird's Nest Stadium where the Olympics occurred. Now, I'll leave it at that, Bob, okay?
All right, Gary. Take care.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
un tocho verde é moi mala da riga. Tienes amores y que los tienes a pares, puñaladas si no mozas, anda guapo, no te laudes. Ojos negros no los quiero y azules son embusteros, solamente los castaños son firmes y verdaderos.
Yo tardo arreiro e un cantar moi beijinho cantano en riba da dia resona no carvalinho mula yo cantar los arreiros y ellos cantar muy baixinho cantando en Rivadavia resona no carvallinho mula cantano en Rivadavia resona no carvallinho mula ay, la, le, lo, ay, la, le, lo.
Arraído tocho verde, arraído tocho verde, muy mala de arrancar. Ay, la, 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 la. Los amorillos primero, los amorillos primero, son muy malos de olvidar. Ay, la, la, ay, la, 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 la. Son muy malos de olvidar. O que tenga mujer plata, o que tenga mujer plata, te embacala todo ano. Ay, la, 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 ay, la, la.
Thank you.
10 million soldiers to the war have gone, who may never return again. 10 million mothers' hearts must break for the one who died in vain. Heads bowed down in sorrow in her lonely years, I heard a mother murmur through her tears. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulders to shoot some other mother's darling boy.
The stations of a race, their future's troubled.
It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
What victory can cheer a mother's heart when she looks at her blighted home? What victory can bring her back all she cared to call her own? Let each mother answer in the years to be, remember that my boy belongs to me.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy.
The stations of a great future troubled. It's time to lay the sword and gun away. There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dares to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy. Let nations of a trace their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
Thank you. plays a boy for you. America, you'll find him strong and true. Place a song upon his shoulder. He is ready to die or go. America, he is my only one. I hope I cry and joy. But if I had a brother, he would march beside his brother. Tramp, 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 the boys are marching.
Smiling through. Say the word, dear. We do as other folks do. Raise two or three. It's absurd, dear, that I should have to coax you. Don't be the way to take a chance with me. Oh, you won't regret it when we're one. Oh, baby, we'll have fun. I won't forget it, so do me a favor, dear. Yes, yes, yes. Listen, honey. Have you got a $1.90? Well, I got to die. I'm going out here and find a parson. Yes! My, my, my.
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken, and I hung my head and cried. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. I'll always love you and make you happy. If you will love me, say the same. But if you leave me, do love another.
Is that on the air? That's not on the air. I'm no. hearing it in my earphone. Stop it.
What?
Is it on the air? It's not on the air.
The CD?
Yeah.
No, it stopped.
Okay. All right, okay.
So you were saying that you called the Israeli embassy, Steve, and what did you say?
I was sitting there, and I said to myself, you know, I got to call up these people. You know, I had written this poem. I was in Israel before there was an Israel. Stop messing this up. And that's how I felt, you know. So I got to call an Israeli embassy, and I said, hi, my name is Steve Ben Israel. I'm a Jewish guy living here, born in New York City, been all over the world, met Christian Jews and Muslims and had all these great conversations. And I just have to tell you that to express my feeling about what the government in Israel, what they're doing to the Palestinian people, because they already destroyed the Israeli incredible peace movement, where they were able to get 300,000-400,000 people into the street of a country of 4 million or 5 million, whatever it is. They're able to destroy and take out the hope and joy of this peace movement. And once they did that, and everything that came after, including what they're doing now, really upsets me. And I just want to let you know, and I'm speaking to this woman who's not really an official at the Israeli embassy, and I said, listen, I feel terrible about what you're doing. I lost my grandparents at Auschwitz, two uncles in Auschwitz. My mother got out early with another brother. I remember during World War II, I was born in 38 in World War II. I was a kid, and my mother was always going through this thing I could never understand. I could see it in her face all the time. It's like, where's my parents? Where's my brothers? Where's my 18, 19 relatives and the other relatives, the 40 relatives? Where are they? It's already 1943. I haven't heard a word. Haven't heard a word. And she was going through that, and I didn't understand that. And she went through all of that, and she always taught me tolerance. 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 And at each point of my life, I've had to investigate and research what this word tolerance means. And as I got older, it became deeper and deeper and deeper what it means. And what it means making humanity happen. So I'm talking to this woman. I said, you know what I'm saying? You know, she says, yes, go on. And I went on and told her, I said, our son is named Baruch Israel. That's Blessed Israel. And he's at the same head that I am. We're artists, we're political artists, we're teachers, we're communicators. We try to spread conscious awareness throughout the world. It is so necessary that we have to begin to talk to each other. Look what we're doing to each other all over the world. I said, if you take a globe and you spin it and close your eyes and put your finger on the globe, and if you end up in Finland, you may be okay, but if you end up in most places, especially in the Middle East with the Israeli-Palestine disconnection. Martin Buber, the great Jewish philosopher, said, I told her, in 1932 there should be a Jewish-Muslim binational state and make it happen. That's in 1932. It's a tough time for vision, I tell her. Tough time for people to believe that they can make peace because the world is almost crumbling. It's like all those apocalypse movies they've been making. It's like the civilization that we all live in is following the apocalypse movies that they're making. So I just want to let you know, it's not only me. I have a lot of friends. We're a group called Zimzum, and it means withdraw, And we're not listed on, we're not online, we're like a secret group, you know. And I'm telling you, if you want to join our group, it's called Tzimtzum, and it's about making the world a better place to live in. As a matter of fact, I'll give you my number, and if you call my number, you'll hear, hi, this is Steve. You can leave a message for Steve, Pamela, and Baba We're out trying to make the world a better place to live in. At the beep, leave a message. So that was my rap with the, basically a rap calling up the Israeli consulate because that's how I feel, you know. You know, it's because being a Jew, you know, it's very pluralistic, and I got my brand. I have my history with it. And all those other kinds of Jews, they have all their trips. And most religions have like seven different parts of them also. And listen, if...
Who was this woman you spoke to with the Israeli embassy?
She was the woman, after calling five times and getting these messages, finally I pressed cultural attaché. I think I'm a cultural worker. And I press, you know, and finally a human voice, I said, is this a true human voice? Because the last five phone calls, they said, press one, press two. And when I pressed two, I got another message. You know, and I'm saying, there's got to be a human being here somewhere in the building. I know it's not Sunday or Saturday, you know. And I call, I finally got this woman. And I said, hi, my name is Steve Ben Israel. I'm a New York Jew, and I'm an artist, and I'm an activist here in New York City, and I just have to let you know. And then that whole rap about my parents and the Holocaust and my relatives and all that stuff, and I just had to express my opinion. And I also heard a great interview with one of the leaders of the Israeli peace movement describes in the year 2000 when Bill Clinton and Yasser Arafat and Barack, whatever his name was, Barack, the general, you know, Barack said to Arafat, you have to give us this, 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 and this. And Arafat said, I give you this, 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 and this. Now let's go. And he came back to Israel and he said, Arafat had nothing to offer. And the peace movement died when that happened. They believed this lie. He made everybody believe this lie, like the weapons of mass destruction was such a lie that everybody believed it. And some people still do. But back to Israel. Listen, Bob. Yeah.
I'm interested in the cultural attaché.
Well, she wasn't there.
Did she communicate with you, or yeah, did she just say...
She was she's listening, and I said...
I understand how you feel that way.
I said, do you understand what I'm trying to tell you? You know, this is... I'm giving you the deepest part of my soul. I mean, that old thing from the Torah, you save one person, you save the world. It's tough to believe. You know, it's very tough to believe that that's true. But in some way, it is true, you know, because you save one person, you're not only saving that one person, you're saving all that's going to come in the future from that person. And like Martin Buber said, everyone who's born into this world brings something to this world that was never here before and will never be here again. And that's about the uniqueness, you know. I was watching the Tea Party today.
Yeah, but, you know, unique as humans are, we do have this terrible proclivity for committing horrible acts of genocide all through human history. The cry has always been, wipe out some other group or family, or, you know, what is this with humans? What kind of apes are we? Apes don't seem to do that quite. I mean, they may occasionally bite one of their colleagues on the neck and draw blood and go, you know, blood crazy, but they don't organize it the way we seem to. Because this guy Goldhagen, who's been studying the Holocaust, or how Germany, which is supposed to be such a tremendously advanced, progressive, autistic, scientific country, could commit something like
that. They bring up Goethe. They bring up all these people. How could the land of Goethe, You know, how could the land of Tom Paine be in Iraq killing innocent people? It's the same line. It's all over the world. It's all the same line. And, you know, as my friend Tony used to say, listen, this is what we're working with. And we've got to make it better. And Tony was a realistic mystic, Tony Nunziata, you know. And he said, Steve, this is what we're working with. And, you know, when I think about each individual human being, especially when they're slaughtered in war or unnecessary, it took 10,000 years to make that person. That person just didn't pop up. There's 10,000 years of families having children and raising them under terrible circumstances, from slave to serf to wage earner to consumer. And all this blocks us from seeing that, as they say, another life is possible. You know, and we're always trying to communicate what that looks like. Then you have to have some idea what a better life and a better world looks like. You have to figure out what's going on there. You know, if we're only making quality stuff for each other, no longer $1.99, $2.99, $3.99, we're making it all equivalent to like $15 socks, that means you only have to have the four-hour workday, so forth and so on. That's, I'm not going to break down the IWW beautiful vision of the beautiful, nonviolent anarchist revolution, as Julian Beck used to say, you know. But Tony was very realistic. Steve, this is what we're working with. We've got to make it better.
P-H-A-T. Fats.
Yeah.
That's great. Great. Wait. You might just nod, Steve. Might be now.
I met a lot of jazz cats over the years. You know, most of them, if they were alive, they'd be like 112 now. But my friend Slappy was like a jazz singer who knew very close with Fats in the early 40s, you know, and hung out with Brando in 1947. And he was on the jazz scene that I went to for 15 years most Sunday afternoons, and he would sing. He would sing all these old Fats Waller tunes. And he would do it like, bye, bye, Blackbird. You know, and he do all Fats Waller's tunes, man.
Oh, another one of his tunes came to mind. Ain't misbehaving.
The sound of his voice was. You don't hear that sound in people's voices. It is so relaxed. He's got nothing to prove. He's just telling you where it is. This is where it is, man. You know, I believe it 100%. I got no shtick for you. I got none of that stuff. So here we go.
Hey,
one,
man.
Two,
it's 4:00
three,
in the morning.
Four.
I just left the Viv Studios. Here we are in Harlem. Everybody's here but the police, and they'll be here any minute. It's high time. So catch this song. Here it is. Sun seemed about to leave for 5 feet long. A mighty man, but not too strong. You'll be high, but not for long. If you're a viper, I'm the king of everything. I got to be high before I swing. Let the bells ring, ding, dong, ding. If you're a viper, say you know you're high when your throat gets dry. Everything's dandy. Oh, yes, you run down to the candy store. Bust your conch on peppermint candy. Then you know your little brown body's sent. You don't give a darn if you don't pay rent. 'Cause the sky's high. So am I, yes, yes. Yes, I vibe a bit. Well, I'm gonna vibe a bit on 88 now. Oh, stop it, darling. I didn't know you cared. That's enough now. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let me dream now. That's a killer. Yes, baby. Better nick that on the sidelines there. My wife's in here tonight. She don't vibe either. You know, get away. Are you kidding? Oh, dear. Say you know you're high. Yes, I know I'm high. 'Cause everything is fine and dandy. Yes, gone down to the candy store. Get me Wrigley's or some peppermint candy. I love it, I love it, I love it. Yes, baby, but my body's saying, I ain't worried about no rent. Get away from me, you hussy. Yeah. I'm tired, so have I. I'm all laid out and relaxed. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
I should take a notion to jump into the ocean. Tain't nobody's business if I do, 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 do. Rather than persecute me, choose that you would shoot me, 'cause tain't nobody's business if I do. You can talk, you can rave, they can say awful things about me. I don't care what you say, go on your way if you doubt me. 'Cause if I go to church on Sunday and tear it down on Monday, tain't nobody's business if I do. I mean it, I solid mean it. We're the cops of the world.
Clean the Johns with the fag, boys. Clean the Johns with the fag. If you'd like, you can use your flag, boys. If you'd like, you can use your flag. We've got too much money, we're looking for toys. Guns will be guns.
This is WBAI in New York City. I don't recall whether I did that in the last 4 or 5 minutes. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. And we should be here until 3:30 this morning. Steve Ben Israel, Bill Prop, myself. And I don't know. Spring is here. So why isn't my heart dancing?
Ah, me lads and me lasses. It's tough to recognize what spring really is. It's something all the poets have beautifully described. We know it from growing up. After the cold winter, all of a sudden, you hear a bird in the morning when you wake up. And there is spring, but they've taken a lot of sprung out of our spring because of the world we live in, you see. And it interferes, you know. It's like having good news and then getting acid reflux, you know what I mean? So spring is here, and like you almost couldn't believe it because the way the world is, because everybody's got the willies. Everybody's walking around counting all day, like counting how much for this, how much for that, how much for this, how much for that. And all of a sudden, hello, it's spring, you should take a break and look out there. There's a blue sky and it's warm, and you don't have your overcoat on. And maybe spring will bring a better future, you know? People always believe that. It's going to get better as they make it worse, as they go along with the people who make it worse. But they still want it better. Now, how do you get it better? If you're going and voting for the people, keep making it worse, even though you want to make it better. What can you do?
That was, you weren't supposed to hear that someone was picking up the telephone to see who was on the line, but
with expertise and precision.
Yes.
A la Inspector.
So who is on the line?
I don't know. Shall we see?
Well, I hope it's someone who is in a civil frame of mind. You're on the radio.
So. Now you're on the radio.
Hello.
Ah.
Hello.
Sounds
Aaron.
Your voice. Hi.
Good morning.
Well, say some sad news I want to share. Jack Harar passed away.
Oh. Oh.
He wrote the book Emperor Wars No Clothes about hemp.
Yeah.
He passed away earlier today. He had a heart a stroke about a year ago.
You're breaking up. Could you move your phone a little bit further away from your mouth?
Is this better?
Yeah, you don't have to shout, though.
Okay. He passed away earlier this morning over in Portland, Oregon, and a lot of people are pretty frazzled by it, but it's causing people to get motivated to carry on the struggle.
His book, how many printings has his book gone into? You know?
I don't even know. I've known Jack since about 1980. When I visited L.A. back in 1980, I would see him park his bus over near the federal building in Wilshire Boulevard pushing a California marijuana initiative. And I even flew out to speak at one of his smoke-ins in 1983.
Do you know anyone involved in that anarchist film festival that was raided by the police?
Yes, I know Priya Reddy.
Yeah?
I heard about that. Remember I called you yesterday to tell you about it?
Give him a call. Ask him if he'd like to talk on the radio.
I don't have a phone number, but if anybody online, if anybody is listening who is involved in the Anarchist Festival, I am asking you as a fellow anarchist to please call in on the air to talk about the Anarchist Festival that's happening this weekend, the stuff happening at Judson Memorial Church and Living Theater, a few other spots. Please call and share it.
Give him the number, Aaron.
Call it at 212-209-2900. And share the information. Come on. Steve Ben Israel is an old-time fellow anarchist. So come on, let's all the generations meet and share what we got to share, especially with you guys getting visited by the Joint Terrorist Task Force.
That's something.
And it's very pathetic. Part of it has to do with the
If pandemic. They come, I just make love to them.
Joint Terrorist Task
Force. I make love. Come in, have a glass of wine, sit down, relax. Is your mother still alive?
Well.
Oh, my God.
Steve, I didn't know that you were also a childhood survivor, Holocaust survivor.
I'm not. My mother was got out in the mid-30s. The rest of them didn't. And so I'm not officially, but I remember when I was 10, my cousin David came off the boat alone. He was 19. I was 10. He was a lone survivor. And he came down the plank, and he looked like this guy. As years later, when I saw foreign movies, I said, that's the way they all looked in Europe. You know, in the late.
What country did he come from?
He came from Poland. He was hidden by three Polish Catholic sisters for 3 years. When he was 14, my uncle, who I never met, put him out the window and said, David, run. And he ran through the forest, came to a little town that he recognized, and knocked on the door of this man who his father knew. And this man took him over to these two Polish Catholic sisters and hid him in the room half the size of your bathroom, taught him how to knit with the candle there so he wouldn't go crazy, and every night at 1 o'clock they took him out to breathe, gave him some food, and in 1948 he came down the plank, lived with me. I taught him English, and he was like, for a minute, my brother, and some shit happened to him here, in front of former Holocaust survivors that I almost, it's so heavy, I almost can't even talk about, because you know why? I really don't now. I want to be happy and gay and joyous and feel all the wonderful things that the world could bring to humanity. Dig.
I know. I had an aunt who was hidden by a Polish woman for 3 years.
Now we're hiding each other.
And while my father and some of the fellows were hiding out in the woods, Polish forests.
There's people hiding all over the world right now, in the Sudan, they're hiding in the Congo, they're hiding in about 50 other places in Indonesia and in Thailand.
It still goes on and on.
People are hiding. And why are they hiding? For the same reason. The people who want to make it better still follow the people who keep making it worse.
And, it's true. This still goes on and on.
And the question is, how do you get the people to make it better without following the people who make it worse? Well, tune in again next week, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. So remember, fellow anarchists, if you're on the air, you listen to the show, call in to talk about what happened. Thank you. I'm going to clear off so you guys can call in. All right.
The king's guardsman's greedy. He's underpaid, he knows. Tailor sew me a cloak of indigo that will disguise me well for the highwayman's game. No one will suspect evil, and the king's cross are the same. I will pay you dearly with half of what I claim. No, said the tailor. The tailor said no. A cloak will not hide what your own eyes see. Cloak will not change what is hidden underneath. Just as mine does not confine the idea of what I am. I am not a tailor, I'm a man. The king's queen is hung for the pleasures adultery knows. Tailor, sew me a cloak of scarlet that will disguise me well for courting on the sly. That will make the fever transparent to the night's eyes. I will pay you dearly with favors and with sighs. No, said the tailor. The tailor said no. Cloak will not hide what your own eyes see. A cloak will not change what is hidden underneath. Just as mine does not confine the idea of what I am. I am not a tailor, I'm a man. King, he is frightened with shadows behind his back. Tailor, sew me a cloak of sable that will disguise me well from the daggers of my foes. That will keep me far above those that are below. I will pay you dearly if you fail on the gallows. No, said the tailor. The tailor said no. A cloak will not hide what your own eyes see. A cloak will not change what is hidden underneath. Just as mine does not confine the idea of what I am. I am not a tailor, I'm a man.
Jack Hardy. Jack Hardy. And, guess I should welcome WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York. They join us at 1:30. And, nope, someone was about to be on the air, but they seem to have bailed. Just hit the off button. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And they can call back if they are mind to.
Maybe God will remind some of these folks what the telephone number here is.
Perhaps they feel they have nothing to add.
Everybody's always got something to add. The mind doesn't stop unless you're asleep. There's all these little things going through your head going... And...
Could be that that person has something going through their head. Do you?
Hey, people.
You're on the radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve.
Yeah?
These two websites I go to called The Daily Coast and Media Matters. Have you heard of them?
Media Matters is very good.
Right.
I'm getting so full of webs that if I'm not careful, I'm going to sit down on that chair and the next thing I'll have a beard 14 feet long. You know, I understand. Media Matters is very good. I discovered some others.
Yep.
And I'm not going to start pushing them, but I get stories, yep. Great, great things from them.
Well, okay. Just say a name. Just tell me your name.
Yeah. I'm new to computers.
Me too.
But I'm into it, you know, and it's been
right.
It's been useful.
Right.
When I first got it, somebody said, did you Google yourself yet? And I said, what's that? And then I Googled myself.
I remember that joke, Steve. You told that joke before.
Did I? I don't know if it's a joke. It's just part of the reality.
Back to, speaking of reality, Steve, and everyone, Media Matters, for instance, what they would do is they would document there have been 250 lies about the health plan. And I think that scares me in terms of what America is going to... Okay, if 60 million people voted for the Republican, those 60 million are going to be vulnerable to any lie that are those 250 lies about, just as one example, the health plan.
The truth is like an Easter egg hunt. It's spread all over the park. It's there. Everything you got to know about how to reorganize society, how to make great poetry, how to make great theater, how to do great medicine, how to teach people to be human to each other, how to combat racism. All these beautiful little things are scattered all over the park called Earth, and you have to work hard to look at this Easter egg hunt. I'm a vegetarian, so I call it a tofu hunt. So you go hunting for the tofu or for the egg, and you open it up, and inside it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And you take that, and you swallow it, and you chew it, and you put it in, you share that with somebody else, and you keep walking, and under this rock you find another piece of tofu or an egg, and all of a sudden it's going to say, oh, how to combat racism. Wow, that's it. So, you know, just keep going.
Thank you. seen her dressed in blue. See the sky in front of you.
Everyone thought they were in the middle of a rainbow. That's what it felt like when you walked down past the neon lights on McDougal Street or Bleecker Street, and people were playing great music in the clubs, and it was a moment in history that people yearned for. I don't put much credit into nostalgia, you know, but there was a kind of a creative energy that we could use a little bit of when Gertie's Folk City was in its heyday, when you could see David Massengill on the air, on the street. Walking, carrying his, what do you have with you now?
Dulcimer. It's a Martin Dulcimer.
Well, that wasn't the only instrument that you played.
I play a little guitar, but the dulcimer is my best instrument, best mountain instrument. You're right. It was charged up. It was a rainbow. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, you could hardly believe your luck.
There was no pot of gold for the musicians, though.
No.
Although some people did seem to turn a good buck by some real estate.
Yeah. You know, when you're starting out like that, you're just really, you just want to play, and you want people to hear you, and that's what it was. And there were all sorts of clubs. There was Folk City, and then Kenny's Castaways opened up again, another venue. And then, of course, there was at the other end, and there were these little dives to places. My very first place I played, I got the hook after a song and a half.
Even earlier.
I think it was called The Dugout.
Yeah, I know The Dugout. That was on, even earlier, like when I got to the Village in 59, at the end of it, met Wavy Gravy. He took me to the Commons on McDougal Street, which became the Fat Black Pussycat, which became Pachitos, and across the street was the Gaslight, and then there was the Bitter End, and then there was the Cafe Raffio, and the Phase 2 on Bleecker Street, and Rick Allman's Bazaar on Bleecker Street.
Yeah. And that was part of the Greenwich Village Coffee House Renaissance.
Man, I just, I wish I had been. When I came up to New York in 1964 as a Boy Scout for the Boy Scout Jamboree in over at Pennsylvania, and we stayed in New York. That was when I saw Richard Burton get out of a cab with Elizabeth Taylor. That was the hotel we were in. He was playing Hamlet. And we were here for 3 days. We went to the Statue of Liberty, and all those things. I wish I'd just gone rogue and come down to the village and seen what was going on. That would have been great.
Well, you were around then, Steve. That's when you and I met. We were in.
We met in 61.
In Three Penny Opera.
Yeah.
Right in the village.
And we were. I remember one time we were invited to a party with Burton and Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were doing Brecht.
And all the time. The place to go to hear music was on McDougal Street.
Yeah.
And
but when I came here, and that was 76, Folk City was the place to sort of, well, let's see what's going on there. And they were still doing good hoots there. And it took me a while. The first person I saw play, I remember it took me about a month before I was brave enough to even go in there. And I Lisa Tribble and I went in, and I said, let's see how good they are. I'm not sure. I might not be good enough to play. So the first person I heard play was John McEndoe, who was great. He sang this great song. I forget something about the bottom of the ocean. I forget. It was a really interesting song. And I turned to Lisa and I said, man, the people are too good here. I don't think I can come and play. And then the next person up, because it was a hoot, was just awful. And I turned to Lisa and I said, I know I'm better than that guy. Maybe I can come back next week and try my luck.
Beautiful.
So that's how I started playing.
But there was a whole bunch of you
that
manifested.
76. So there was a different generation of people.
Yeah, you just played Jack Hardy.
Yeah.
And there was... It was you and Rod McDonald.
Yeah.
And this guy Tedesco.
John Tedesco. I just saw him the other day.
And Tom and Tandy. And then people like Tom Pacheco would show up.
Yeah.
You know, and Rosalie Sorrells was an old-timer, but she would show up.
Yeah.
And Peter Stanfell would show up. But then you guys were this next beautiful wave of folk music, you know. And then I know after Folk City closed, and Folk City, I was there in 61 to see Dylan, and I remember in 68 I saw John Hammond Jr. Play there when I came back from an American tour, and then started going there a lot, in 76, 77, and saw this beautiful, next gorgeous, deep wave of all you, must have been about 12 or 15 of you people who were
probably
doing this great folk music all the time.
It was good. It was a good scene. We had a nice little run for about, we had a good long run, maybe 10 years we had a good run. And then, the wind sort of dies down a little bit.
And then clubs. Fast Folk.
Fast Folk was around, and that helped.
Yeah. Speakeasy.
Speakeasy. And
continuity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now the it's harder to make it as a club. The rent's so high. I hated when they cleaned up New York. I don't know if people agree with that, but when they started cleaning up New York, I said, man, the rents are going to be too high for everything. There got to be some. There got to be some.
Disneyfication.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse.
I hated it when they. It's
positively goofy.
Yeah. Now Bob Porco is here, who is the grandson of Mike Porco.
He was the only man on McDougal Street that everybody called Mister.
Yeah,
I called him Mike, maybe because I'm older. I called him Mike. I felt very comfortable calling Mike.
Yeah. I called him Grandpa. Yeah.
What did Dylan call him?
I got
Mike.
Yeah,
called him Mike, and Mike always called him a Bobby. Always referred to him as Bobby. So I'm going to keep that tradition. I'm going to call him a Bobby also when I see him. One of these days. Or when I write about him, it's definitely going to be Bobby. Always Bobby, never Bob.
You're doing a book about that time.
I'm writing a book about more about Mike, trying to do a bio on Mike and Gertie's. And obviously Mike became Gertie's, and Gertie's became Mike. And so when I got pinched in the butt to do this story on him, I've always wanted to do Mike's story one way or another, even just from my own documentation. But something got me and said, Mike had a legacy. What's your legacy? Excuse me. And, you know, I thought his story was just staring me in the face, and I should just do it, just get it together, get it on paper. And, you know, if people like it, they like it. If they don't like it, it's on paper. And I made it real. I made it tangible, something that people can go to the bookstore and buy. And, I mean, that's where I'm in the process of doing right now. So, but his story is pretty interesting, and but it's kind of sketchy, too. It's tough to put together from his time that he landed in America, or you know, and before then, obviously. But the period between 1960 and 1980 is in the minds of and memories of everyone who's still with us and still playing. And that's how I met David, and that's how I met Jack Hardy, and that's how I met Richie Havens, or talked to, you know, I did meet Richie Havens, and you know, I got to talk to all kinds of people that I would have never dreamed a few months ago touching base with. So it's been just a great journey for me, just a complete trip, and I'm you know, riding the wave. So yeah, the book is something that is a project, but the 50th anniversary now just sort of splashed.
Yeah, you're roping us into this show.
I'm roping everybody.
That's the
in
way Mike would say. So you're going to rope us. You're going to rope me in.
I'm going to rope you in to do the bring you following too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it just it wasn't the forefront, but it has become on the front burner where I was trying to contact people for interviews, and then it just became. Well, you know what? This year is the 50th year that it became Folk City, and it was called Folk City and publicized as Folk City. So let's have a party. Let's get everybody that I'm contacting, let's get them all together. And they're all just so eager to see each other and eager to connect with a Porco. And, you know, I'm that Porco. I'm just lucky enough to be that person. But so whether I'm the facilitator or the organizer or... I was telling David before, I think I just sort of, you know, nudging elbows, putting everybody towards the center, getting everybody together for a June 7th get-together at where Gertie's ended up.
June
in the
7th.
Village. June now, 7th of this year.
What day of the week is that?
That's a Monday, David.
A Monday. Hoot night. Monday was so, hoot night.
Yeah, it's going to be at the Fat Black Pussycat, actually, where... you know, the Fat Black Pussycat has been in, what, different locations for 40 years, 40-plus years, but now it ended up in the old Gertie spot.
These names just travel. There's a place called the Kettle of Fish, you know, in the village that used to be on 3rd Street.
That's where David and I just met tonight.
And the Fat Black Pussycat used to be in McDougal Street, and now that these titles keep moving.
Yep.
But the great thing about when Mike opened up the Folk City on 3rd Street, when you first walk in, and as a comedian early before I got to the village, I played joints that looked like Folk City because they were strip clubs. Because you had, like, the way it was set up, it was like a strip club. And it was a strip club. Tony Pastor's,
yeah.
In the 50s, there was all these strip clubs with these guys with uniforms and long jackets and green hats outside, you know. And then they show you the changing of the culture from strip club to holy... Folk Music Emporium just goes to show you certain things are possible.
Yeah.
And back.
Well, we're trying again.
Yeah, we're not going to have any strippers on June 7th, but at least none booked. But we don't know. David might take off his top. I don't know. but we're going to have, right now, I have 20 or 20 plus. I have 2 dozen performers who are committed to the time.
I like to make it.
Who are they?
2 dozen and 1.
2 dozen and 1. There you go. Yeah. So Steve is in too. I'm confirming an awful lot. I'd like to just say names that I definitely have certain positive, confirmed, triple confirmed. Like David knows, I emailed him twice to say, just send me an email back again saying that you're in, you know. And, you know, obviously it's April 15th, so for June 7th, I just really want to dot my I's and cross all my T's and make sure everybody's set. But I got a good... split between the middle, between the old guard, the people from the 60s and the old 4th Street location, and the new guard, the fast folk crowd and speakeasy crowd. So right now we're talking about, you mentioned Peter Stanfill, he's going to be there. Eric Weisberg is in. Lily Aniel is going to be there. David Massengill, Jack Hardy. I don't have my cheat sheet in front of me right off the bat.
I wrote them down, Jack.
Thank you.
Let's see. Pat Sky might come up.
Pat Sky might come up. Roger Sprung is in. Roger Sprung is 79 years old, and he just said, we don't need amplification. You know, let's just get together where are we going to have the jam session? Where are we going to have the jam session? Let's just get together. Why don't we start at 5 o'clock? You know, so he's eager to get there and get together and just start picking, and whoever jumps in, jumps in. Bev Grant, you mentioned her in the break before. Eric Franzen is in. Vince Martin, old guard guy.
I love Vince Martin. He's such a cool guy. He came over to my apartment one time and showed me how to do a couple of things, and he was just the greatest guy.
You know, Mike did this 25 years ago.
Yeah, 79.
And we
oh, I'm sorry, 86. For a weekend.
I remember doing one of those nights.
85.
And it was run by the guy from Chicago, Bob...
Bob Gibson.
Bob Gibson.
The 20th anniversary.
That was the 20th in 79.
And I remember Vince Martin coming there, mm-hmm. and Big Ed McCurdy.
Yeah, Big mm-hmm. Ed.
Big Ed McCurdy.
Yeah.
Ed was great. He was a good friend.
Yeah.
He did the first show in 1960, when it was the Fifth Peg. So Izzy Young should be mentioned too, because without Izzy Young, really, I don't think, I mean, only people from the era can speak to this, but I don't think music would have ever been in that Italian restaurant anytime soon, other than, you know, unless Izzy approached Mike and said, you know, why don't you bring it here? You have the liquor's license, it's ripe. Your place is ripe, the time is ripe. So Mike ended up being sort of the spear front, or Gertie's ended up being the spearhead of the musical movement that happened there, but only because Izzy approached him with Tom Prendergast. But without that, I don't think Mike would have come up with that idea, you know. I'm sure he was just, you know, still trying to come up with the next type of sandwich to sell to put on the menu, but music was what made him. And as David said, fell in his lap.
That's another part of the reputation of this guy. He never let performers go hungry.
Mm-hmm. You know,
The club could be empty. If someone performed, he would feed them royally.
Yeah.
At least that's what I heard.
There's stories about...
David Massengill doesn't look like he's had too many heavy meals in his life.
Joe Mara, who
he would have, and he'd say, have the taste.
Joe Mara ran the Night Owl.
Night Owl, and I see Joe from time to time. He's not that well, but we catch up for lunch once in a while. And he would say, I paid them well, I fed them and their girlfriends. Phil's in Jersey, comes in once a month, and from the neighborhood, Joe Mara, we had a big argument about the Iraq War. So I was in Korea.
Did you mention Billy Nile?
I was about to say, there's two other.
I just got a call from Sugar Blue.
Sugar Blue?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Sugar Blue was more of a... He was more the tail end. I don't know if he really crossed paths with Mike. I mean, I'd have to ask him himself.
Oh, he played there.
No, I'm sure he played. Yeah. I know he played there, but I don't know if Mike was out in 1980, and early of 1980 at that. So, you know, the book that I'm doing, nameless book right now, but the bio on Mike, I'm trying to keep it to, you know, when he came to America to when he sold Folk City, because after that is sort of... I mean, it's a part of the story, but not a part of Mike's story, really, you know? So I'm trying to, that one little period there, 79, 80, there was a little crossover of some folk that showed up, Lucinda Williams, Suzanne Vega, you know, names that did show up in 1979, the year itself, and knew Mike a little bit, but made their names sort of after that. And Sugar Blue, I'm not sure, I'm positive, you know, maybe he'll call back, but, there were a lot of people that came in Robbie Wolver's time. Sonic Youth was even there. I mean, there were bands, Talking Heads performed there. David Johansen came back into New York and performed there. A lot of CBGB crossover.
Some party.
I'm hoping so, yeah. And
how big a place is this?
It's the same size place as the last Gertie's was on West 3rd. Except
they don't have that back room that went to the kitchen, do they?
No.
Which place is this?
like what used to be the old, not the first folk city, but the folk city that Mike had that we all went to.
Yeah, in the 70s.
In the 70s.
With right. the nasty wallpaper.
That's now. Third
Street.
That's now.
On Third Street.
Yeah, they took off. It used to be this other runway.
Yeah, they used to have
They cut that
room.
Down.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Oh, yeah. The other runway. Well, you know what? But what I was saying was the ground floor level is still the same storefront all the way straight back.
Right.
That's where we plan to have like an acoustic get together and, you know, some playing, some picking, some meeting, greeting, schmoozing and drinking.
Yeah.
And but now Noam Dorman, who owns the Fat Black Pussycat.
Menachem Dorman's son.
Right. Yeah. Right. Manny Dorman's son. They busted out to the left. And
Did
so
they?
there's a little Moroccan lounge, sort of a after hours type place for the locals nowadays that sit there with the computers or whatever, just in the dark making out or whatever. And then downstairs is full soundstage. The Village Underground is also part of his umbrella.
That's a great space.
Right. So there you got a great space. So everything's just been coming together like you know, like that rainbow, like you said, just something that you know, just all of a sudden forms and just comes to a crown. You know, I sort of bumped my way into everyone's world and said, "Hey, I'm Mike Porco's grandson. I want to do this book and interviews," and everyone's been eager to talk about it. And then, I want to do this 50th. Oh, you know what? I'm free. I want to do it too. And then, let me see if I can get the place. And then you get the place, and you find out that there's a full soundstage downstairs. It's just one serendipitous. Blessing after another.
Now, I haven't been down there. Is that where we used to have the dressing room down there?
Garland.
It's a double-wide basement, yes.
We saw Garland Jeffries there.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a big room.
It's a big room, yeah. It's a nice room.
My son played there with the Miles Davis Memorial Band.
Right.
It's a great space.
It's a
great
nice
sound system. It's a great space.
Yep.
Would that be a better place, or you want to use the old...
Yeah, we're going to utilize that, yeah. Noam's given us full reign of the place. I mean, thankfully... you know, without Noam saying that, being thankful that he's in a historic facility and being, you know, trying to pay homage to Folk City and the fact that he's in that space, he was welcome to offering us the upstairs, the downstairs, and, you know, I'm taking advantage of it. So, you know, not to be blunt about it, but definitely we're going to have the downstairs where all the amplified music is, and we're going to have a video feed to the people upstairs, and it's just going to be a blast. It's going to be real real fun, and like I said, if I have 24 acts right now committed, if I have 20 people come, and that's all that shows, then that's great.
Believe me, there'll be a lot of people.
If it ends up being, I walked in the streets yesterday between clients.
You may have 20 acts.
I may have an awful lot of people.
You're going to get hundreds of people in there.
It looks like a lot of acts.
Well, yeah. I'm sure hoping so. I hope that Noam has a real headache and that he, you know, has people out to his door late at night that night, because that's the reason why it's a Monday night. You
should
know,
be an official plaque. I'm serious. People do this. Dave Van Ronk now. Dave Van Ronk Way in Sheridan Square.
Yeah, place or street.
Dave Van Ronk Street.
Street.
I thought it was Way. Okay. So the media was there. Tom Paxton showed up. And,
sure.
And Peter Yao and a lot of other good people.
Yep.
And Mike deserves a just like Tom Paine at 59 Grove Street, because he died there in 1809 and 1923. Put up this beautiful plaque of Thomas Paine. The world is my country. All humanity are my brethren. There is but one God. To do good is my religion. That's on the plaque of Tom Paine. And Mike Porco, you know, have to find a poetic way of saying, used to be a strip joint and he made it a holy shrine for folk music. I mean, it should be like he did the greatest creation, the creation out of nothing.
Yeah,
that's the deepest creation, Mike Porco, the creation out of nothing.
Yeah.
And listen.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was saying that to David before on the platform while we were a little sidetracked, stranded. What would you call that exactly, that little foray into onto 14th Street? Anyway, I was just saying that, you know, everyone that I've been catching up with and talking with, they're all still creating. I mean, I've been MIA from the whole project my whole life, you know. Everyone's been still making music all the time.
What is it that you do?
I work as a personal trainer, so for the last 10 years, I've been traveling to and fro New York and up to where I live. I live upstate, and So I commute, and oddly enough, I park my car in Beacon, New York. I park my car there, sits all day, and it's about, you know, literally 100, 300 yards away from where Pete Seeger plays his monthly get-together. So anybody who knows folk music knows Beacon, New York is where Pete lives, you know, and that's where Pete has made his home for the last, you know, almost 50-some-odd years. And but, you know, the whole gestalt of the folk scene was sort of over my head, behind me, beyond me somewhere. Had to catch up with me, or I had to catch up with it. So I've been able to bring my car back to Beacon on the first Friday night of every month, and actually meet up with Pete, play with Pete. I play a little guitar. So, but you know, because I'm a personal trainer and I work for myself, I have a little time to meet up with Dave and meet up with other people. So, like I said before, it's just everything has just offered itself to this time for me to connect with people, and to, you know, what I'm thinking and what I'm hoping is just to get everybody to connect again with each other for the 50th, and then of course Robbie Wolliver, who bought the club from Mike with his wife and Joe Hillisum in 1980, making a push now to get Gertie's inducted into the Hall of Fame for next year, 2011. He's got a theatrical production of Hoot, one of his books that he put out. That's also going to be coming out sometime in 2011. So there's a big kickoff to do with this 50th anniversary party.
Speaking of kickoffs, this is WBAI in New York City, KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York. Jack Hardy lives within range of that radio station, I think.
Yeah, he's up in Calicoon. Yep.
Right.
Up in JFF. Yeah, JFF is what I get by me.
Oh, yeah?
I guess, yeah. So now, and Jack is up there. Calicoon is, I don't know if you're familiar with Sullivan County at all. I mean, it's really no, there are some centering type towns, but nothing to speak of. It's all very backwoods, and so if you want to get something completely opposite of the village, Calicoon is a good choice. but yeah, he'll be there, and he'll be emceeing, and I also got, so Jack emceed the 79 reunion for the New Guard. He'll be emceeing the 79, or the
actually Bob the 50th. Gibson. Bob Gibson.
There were two of them, right? Yeah. I was about to say that. There was Bob Gibson who emceed, and with Jack, and introduced the old guard, so to speak. Jack introduced the new guard, and Jack will be introducing the new guard in the 50th anniversary this June 7th, and Dominic Chianese will be introducing the old guard.
You're on the air.
Hi, it's Jack Hardy.
Hey, Jack.
Hey, Jack.
Hey, Jack.
No, it's not. It's Fred.
Oh.
How you doing? So you guys know the...
Bye, Jack.
You fooled me.
Well, that's probably the first time you've been fooled, Bob.
Jack's in Italy.
By you, anyway.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You saved me trying to call him. I had to call him about something else, something we wanted to do up here, a music event.
You were in New York City tonight.
I was in New York, and I got back. I got back at 1:15 or so, and my puppy was well behaved while I was away for 15 hours. He's just great. That was my main concern.
How was the meeting in New York?
The meeting was very good. The meeting at Cooper Hall, Cooper Union, the Great Hall, was wonderful. The panel was great. There was a lot of interaction.
Did you record it?
I did record it. I should have recorded it off the board, but I couldn't have filmed from there, so it was a little difficult being in two places. It's a great space, but the sound on the board is great, but they really need some speakers. Either they're out of phase or something, but anyway, it was a great event. I haven't reviewed the recording, but I'm sure it's okay. But the panel was great. It was Josh Fox and Albert Appleton. He's the international consultant on water resource and management, and he was wonderful. There was a fellow, I forget his name now, who talked about underground water migration, which I want to review, but there were so many people there, I was drawn into other conversations, and I that's why I record things when at events like this. And Dr. Colburn, and if I didn't mention Josh Fox, they sat next to each other, and Calvin Tillman came in from Texas, the mayor of Dish, Texas, who's been dealing with this natural gas problem, and an attorney whose name I can't recall it at the moment. And it was just great. It was an afternoon Q&A and presentation, and then Dr. Colburn was the keynote speaker. She opened up the evening. And the place was three-quarters full, and the Great Hall, I guess, holds, I don't know, 800 people, maybe 900. So it was a success.
It's bigger than Gertie's.
It's certainly bigger than Gertie's.
But the acoustics are much better in Gertie's.
Oh, the acoustics were good. It was good at Gertie's.
It seemed to be okay for Lincoln and Douglas.
I tried to get on a bit earlier, Bob. I came in while you were playing the Beatles. I spoke with Josh Fox, and I didn't know that you were going to have guests tonight, and that's what I had said to Josh, and he was pretty wiped out. But he said to give him a call, and if he was awake, he'd be happy to come on for a few minutes. And he's also putting on a play that's opening soon, and again, I didn't even have that time to ask him the date of that, but I'm just curious. You guys rang a few bells. I lived on Grove Street also, and I've seen that plaque. And anyone have any of that soul food at the Pink Teacup?
They're moving to where Sweet Basil was.
Uh-huh.
They're opening up in a bigger place.
Okay.
And I'm a vegetarian, and once in a while I walk in there, I just make sure if I'm getting, like, mashed potatoes and lima beans and salad and coleslaw, that there's no pig fat in it.
I used to get hunger pangs like nobody's business with the smell of that food drifting up to the third floor. But
we've been talking about Fox City here.
What about the Speakeasy? You guys ever play the Speakeasy?
Yeah,
David must have.
I played there.
I played there many times. I
played there with Ed Sanders once.
You know, David has picks on his fingers. He's he's been tuning his auto harp. And sitting there with earphones on.
Dulcimer.
Made a big difference. I'm sorry.
An
auto harp
like
is
it.
More like a machine, right?
Yeah.
But there we go.
There we go. It's Dulcimer. Let me play a little song then.
Please do.
I thought I'd play. This is one. It's about standing up for your friends, which seems to be something that's close to what we're trying to do. Several people have recorded this. Dave Van Ronk did a real nice version. And he used to have this great habit of saying nice things about you behind your back and telling you the most wickedly funny, horrible things to your face. So I really miss Dave. This is called My Name Joe. Can not be understood. He cries like David Sansom. His English is not good. Oh, his English is not good. Joe's balls of the kitchen, but on the outside he knows. The low man on the totem is wearing giveaway clothes. Wearing giveaway clothes. Joey fights the good fight. He wears a white uniform. Waiters are all artistes out chasing unicorns. Oh, chasing unicorns. Joe works 14 hours. After 10 he starts to booze. He gets very sentimental. He sings the Buddha Blues. Oh, he sings the Buddha Blues. My name Joe, my name Joe.
There is a king in Thailand, and he plays a jazz drum. He has a fine and healthy son. Oh no, I'm not the one. My name's Joe. On a wall by the time clock, Joe is beaming from a photograph. Someone drew across his face. Waiters began to laugh. Oh, began to laugh. Well, Joe picked up a hatchet and he tenderized the wall. When he got through with it, time clock wasn't punching anymore. Time clock wasn't punching anymore. Waiters ran for cover. Maitre d' began to lisp. The drunkard in the corner said his lettuce was not crisp. Oh, his lettuce was not crisp. Then the owner called immigration. Said, here's someone you should know. He's an illegal alien and I think his name is Joe. Oh, I know his name is Joe. My name's Joe, my name's Joe. There is a king in Thailand, and he plays a jazz drums. He has a fine and healthy son. Oh no, I'm not the one. My name's Joe. King, that man from immigration, he said, I got a job to do. Easy questions, easy answers, just point me to the kitchen crew. Point me to the kitchen crew. He asked Leroy from Harlem. He asked Cisco from Mexico. He asked a white trash from Tennessee. They all said, my name Joe, my name Joe, my name Joe, my name Jose. The immigration man, he sputtered. Kitchen crew, they roared. And while they were arguing, Joe slipped out the back door. Joe slipped out the back door, slipped out the back door. Down the beach, Joe tries to listen to the heartbeat of a whale. How it echoes his own heartbeat and the distance he has sailed. Oh, the distance he has sailed. My name's Joe, my name's Joe. There is a king in Thailand, and he plays a jazz drum. He has a fine and healthy son. Oh, no, I'm not the one. My name's Joe. My name Joe. My name Joe.
You know, that was great.
It is great. It's a great story. There's going to be a national ID card, though, or at least they're talking about it, and that'll make it impossible for people to say, I am Spartacus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's going to be easier to single out troublemakers with that, you know?
And whistle. Track you as well.
Well, everyone.
You just have to say your name.
I hope to tell you I'm a troublemaker.
Yeah.
Say your name is Ronald Reagan. You just say, you know,
I don't recall.
What's your name?
I don't recall.
I am Ronald Reagan. You'll be cool.
I don't recall.
What was it last summer? Was it Bob Dylan was down in Tennessee and was like kind of just walking around and he got stopped by the cops?
No, it was Jersey. Yeah,
was it Jersey. New Jersey?
It was right here. Yeah.
And he didn't have an ID or anything.
Yeah, and, vagrant.
And so they. He was patient, though. I was kind of impressed that he didn't pull a diva thing. you know. But that's interesting.
Well, I'm gonna pull an experiment sometime around this 50th anniversary and just stand on a corner somewhere and see how many people actually know some of the names from there. You know, have you ever heard of Joan Baez? What do you know about Joan Baez? You know, a lot of the students aren't really that aware. A lot of the people on the streets aren't that aware of the past. You know, so this should be fun to hopefully get a lot of publicity for it and bring some of the names that, like I said, are still creating, still making poignant music and can still pull it off, make their names known again.
There was a couple of names that was
thank you, David.
That you said might show up.
Dave, might show. Well, you know, Willie Niles are definite. Willie Niles was so eager for it. There were a couple of mites, like you said, Pat Sky. I think you mentioned before.
Pat's a great friend of Dave Van Ronk, and he's a great musician. And Dave Bromberg.
Bromberg was.
How about Jerry Jeff?
I haven't chased him down. You mentioned his name to me. I'll have to get on his
Bromberg tail. Recorded one of my songs. He just put it out this year.
I
think it's a recording from like over 20 years ago, but he put it out this year. I just got an ASCAP check.
He's
going to pay my taxes.
You know, when
bless his heart. And you know what? That was the greatest thing. It was Dollar Night at Folk City. It was Dollar Night at Folk City, and there was like six of us, and he got in for a dollar, you know, and so everybody had like a 20-minute set, and Eric Franson was playing guitar behind me, and I'd played one song, and all of a sudden Franson turns to me and says, Dave Bromberg just came in, play Fairfax County, he'll love it. So, and Eric Franson has a great backup on the guitar for that. And so we played it, and after the set, Dave was just—he was going crazy over the song, and he bought us beers all night. I was really—and then he said he had a show at the Bottom Line at the weekend, and to come to the dressing room and hang out with him. I couldn't believe my—you know—this was like, wow, Dave Bromberg is saying this to me, and he—and he didn't like the dulcimer, but he liked the way I played the dulcimer. He said dulcimer is something you play in the bathtub. But he said, "Come to the dressing room and bring that thing that you play." I remember he said that. And when I showed up at the Bottom Line, in the dressing room was Dave Van Ronk, and Bromberg insisted. He said, "Play that song." And so I played a command performance for Dave Van Ronk, and Dave Van Ronk said, "Kid, I think we're gonna get along. Can you drive?" Because he was between wives, he needed a driver, and he never learned to drive. So that whole thing came out of Folk City and Eric
Dollar Night.
Dollar Night, yeah. At Folk City, and
you wouldn't play Fairfax County for us now, would
I
you?
I could play Fairfax County.
I could listen to it.
Well, let's. Yeah, since we. So this is my version. Now there's the Roach version, the Roach sister version. There's the. There's the Joan Baez version, the Dave Van Bromberg. There's other people that have done it that haven't recorded it. But Lucy Kaplansky does a beautiful version of it, but she hadn't recorded it. But this is my version.
Kissed sun was newly warmed. The clouds were as the flowers that bloom but for a morn. He gave back all my money and bowed most gallantly. Promise for meet me that night beneath the tree. We'd flee to some far island, and there we would be wed. Freely we would live there with no price upon his head. That night I went to meet him with my inheritance. He kissed me neath the half moon, and joyful we did dance. Oh, love betrays all secrets, it whispers in the breeze. The sheriff he did follow with all his deputies, like hounds rushing to slaughter the fox whose luck is run. And he stood erect and cursed them, "God damn you, everyone." They seized him in a fury, and heeding not my plea, they hung him from the oak tree where he made love to me. Oh, once I loved an outlaw, he came and stole my heart. Oh, how I count the hours since we were torn apart. There it is.
Oh, it's too much.
I'd like to just talk about that moment when I met Mike Porker for the first time. Actually met him. I had been to Folk City, and Beverly Grant saw me. She had a band, Beverly Grant and the Human Condition. She saw me play at the Three Penny Cafe up in Woodstock that was owned by Henry Howard, and he was in Three Penny Opera with us in 1961. And she went over to Mike and said, "I want this guy to work with me." And Mike says, "What does he do?" And I said, she says, "He's very funny." He says, "Oh, I don't have comedians here." He says, "No," he says, "he's not only a comedian, he does poetry. He's very theatrically, just came off a 15-year tour around the world." "No, I don't have comedians here. I don't have comedians here." And he says, "No, he's more than a comedian." He says, what kind of jokes you do?" I said, "I do folk jokes." He says, "What?" You know? He goes, "What'd you say?" And then I said, "Folk jokes, like Folk City." Meanwhile, Beverly is choking from laughter.
Yeah.
And it was like my first foray back into that world after being on the road doing theater. And it was a wonderful bridge, because eventually, after a year or two, I started doing it in theaters, you know. But meeting all you guys, Larry Estridge and you, and the guys, we just made that incredible list of talent and this community of people that worked there in the second phase. Forget about all the other phases. And what you were able to do in those days was keep a continuity that had already left most of the village. The Gaslight was no longer there.
the phase two was no longer there.
We were lucky that we had people
and
like
it kept going. See, that was a brilliant, and I was able to be part of it. And it was,
aliens came in business suits.
Yeah,
because the consciousness,
Rod McDonald,
the consciousness that was around me. Me and you have talked about Traven for years. You know,
yeah, be Traven.
And what an influence he was on our lives. This great man who wrote Treasure to Sierra Madre, and there was that whole beautiful vibe around there. And I was able to. I was the only comedy or theater guy that was working there during that period, and it was a great experience to me. Mike Porco, man,
he accepted everything. It's interesting. I remember I was sitting at the corner of the bar at the end, right where you came in with those swinging doors, and just having a beer with Mike and his brother
John.
And John was great. John was just so great. I always enjoyed John. John was always giving me a taste. I like the taste. And so I'm sitting there just talking, just shooting the breeze with Mike, and this guy comes in, he burst through these doors, and he's going, and he's like saying to the world, I'm the best thing that's ever been in the village. I'm going to tear it up. I'm going to, who do I talk to hire, get hired here? And I'm hearing, but Mike is sort of like doing this, and he hasn't heard the guy. I think sometimes I used to think Mike was hard of hearing. But I said, oh, well, you talk to this guy right here. He's the guy that owns it. And the guy says, he jerks his head real quick, and then he turns to Mike and he goes, gives him his spiel again. I'm the best thing that's ever going to be, and you hire me, and I'm going to be the next big thing. And so I'm better than John Lee Hooker. That's what he said. And so Mike says to him, oh, so now you want to hook a me. And it totally went over the guy's head. He said, huh? Huh? And I was trying to tell the guy, just relax, and the guy just wouldn't relax, and he shook his head again, and then he got all frustrated because he realized that Mike had just made a little joke. Mike was just trying to connect with him, make a little joke, and he got frustrated and then turned on his heels and rushed out. The next big thing that would have hit Polk City.
I'm never like, came back.
He never came back, and so we missed that one. But I'll never forget that. I was trying to just get the guy to relax, because Mike liked to just joke around and fool around with people.
Well, he was living the great American dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was calm, he had a calm. He had a calmness.
That became the Folk City finale, the Great American Dream, David Massengill's. Yeah. Huh? How did that come about, where everybody just always ended up performing that together?
Well,
at the
we
end.
Started doing that. Jack Hardy had started this thing, the Folk Project, and they used that as one of their songs. and they had it's kind of each verse has a different character, and so it was good for people to sing the different verses. And the chorus actually had a nice chorus, the Great American Dream, mm-hmm. they could sing on. And so for that 20th anniversary, they had just been doing it. They had played a nice show at the Bottom Line, and so the characters were in place, and so they started closing the night. Bob Gibson had never heard of me, so when I went to talk to Bob to see if I could get on early that week, he was saying, sure, kid, we'll put you on later. And he was kind of putting me off a little bit.
Yeah.
But then somebody said, you should really put him on.
Right.
And then Bob immediately became...
Thank God for that somebody.
As soon as Bob immediately became somebody that was trying to help me out and do this.
Video footage of Folk City?
The 25th anniversary. But 25th, the 20th anniversary, no.
No, I'm just saying in general.
Yeah. Very, very little.
I have some video, color video shot of me in 79 somewhere. Somewhere in that pile of stuff you collect after 51 years of being a performer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, somewhere I have me at Folk City doing Shri Badu It. Remember Shri Badu It? I premiered Shri Badu It. I had this character called Industrial Yoga. It was during that period where all these Swamis and Est, and Sri Srimoy, and I went to the guy. And now for industrial yoga, here is Shri Badu It. Well, welcome, truly welcome. We have a great meditation tonight. Our meditation is called industrial yoga, where we try to meditate between the people and the food. You see, the people hear about the food, they smell the food, they see it, but they don't eat it.
That's why we do not chant Om, but we do is Paraka Kambaka Rashaka breathing pattern, and then we take in on one, hold two, let out on three, and then we chant lunch. Lunch is what we chant because lunch is what we want. We also chant lunch because our government is out to lunch. You should also chant lunch because your government is out to lunch. So everybody join in, Puraka Kambaka Rashaka, and together we go lunch. Ah, to pray and to laugh. Gifted, gifted. So that was where I premiered. It went on. It had some great lines in it. Like, all this talk about God. God, God, God. God is absent because we are absent. Can you imagine what it'd be like if he were present? That would be such a present. Well, Mike Porco gave us that present. You know, he's one of those guys. He's like a biblical character. I didn't know him that well. I just felt him because I was there a lot, you know. But to have that place, God.
Well, that 20th anniversary, I remember they started using the Great American Dream as like the last song, and I was able to be there.
Yeah.
But on the last night they did it was a Sunday. I had my dishwashing shift. I had a part-time dishwashing job for 9.5 years, and I remember I was kind of late because I would get off late, and I was worried. And they let me do. They had a certain number of verses, and I had an extra verse. Actually, I wrote an extra several. I wrote a writer verse, and they would let me come in and sing one of the verses, and it would be the extra verse. And so I remember coming in, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were just starting the song, and I was able to come up and participate. And that was the last night of the, because it was a week long, a 20th anniversary week long. And you ought to think about that, a week long thing. So it was kind of a very special night for me to come in that last night. It was great to be recognized.
And then you went everywhere. You guys have been all over the world with this music.
But to come in, it was in such a dramatic way after washing dishes. My shift to washing dishes, and I get to go up on stage and sing the finale song of
that's better than the movie. Yes.
It was a nice kind of a movie scene.
That's better than the movie.
Yeah, that was December 79.
Yeah,
in the place in West Third.
Yeah,
the West Third location.
And Mike liked that song too. Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you know, a couple of tidbits that I find when I'm researching Mike is. You know, some people say that he didn't have ears, he wasn't really listening, he was watching more Monday Night Football. You know, there's probably a lot of truth to different things, but he had to be there for thousands and thousands of performers. Well, not thousands. All right, let's say thousands. But certainly over the course of 20 years on the Monday Night Hoots, that 30, 40 people would come in and want to play. And, you know, he'd have to stomach some really bad people, too. So, there were some times where he was looking up at watching TV. But from the musicians that I've spoken to and from what they've told me, they say, oh, yeah, Mike was really listening. He would come to me later on and say, you know, bring out a verse and say, what did he mean by this? And he was able to...
tune in.
He was able to pick out the imposters, the people that, you know, weren't really true to themselves, apparently, from what I understand. So... he didn't know anything about folk music in the beginning, but over time he saw that that was his bread and butter. That's what was going to keep people coming into the in the doors and keeping that cash register noisy, you know.
And what fantastic teachers he had! Cecil Taylor, Ed McCurdy, Brother John Sellers, Cynthia Gooding, Eric Darling, Tommy Makem, Liam Clancy, The Tarriers, Clarence Cooper, Eric Weisberg, The Weavers, Richard Weissman, Cisco Houston, Reverend Gary Davis, Carolyn Hester.
Cisco's last performance was there, very last.
Sandy Bull, The Greenbrier Boys, Bob Yellen, Ralph Rensler, John Harold, Ron Elleron, the Shanty Boys.
That's just 1960.
I'm not remembering all these names.
Here's your Hall of Fame right
there. That's just 1960. He's not even up to 1961.
Anita Shear, Jack Elliott, the Weavers, Victoria Spivey, Dave Van Ronk, Odetta, Judy Collins, John Lee Hooker. I saw that show, both John Lee Hooker and Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
That just passed.
The anniversary was April 11th. It was a two-week booking. April 11th was Dylan's first opening act for John Lee Hooker.
Right.
Dylan and John Lee Hooker also did the Cafe Wa with Doris Hankinson, who sang Kumbaya in the 1960 Lord Buckley recording, and with Fred Neil and the Reverend Jonathan Hicken on bass, who was really in the army, you know? Wow. But he showed up on the weekends in his three-piece suit, and the Reverend Jonathan Hicken, but he was in the army, played their weekends with Dylan, John Lee Hooker, and Doris Hankinson. You know that Lord Buckley album where she's singing Kumbaya behind him and doing Black Cross?
Wow.
It's fantastic.
That was great scenes.
Yep.
You know, that's the other thing. Dylan's book about that whole thing, too, I was just so... If he had never written a song, that book is a great book.
The Chronicles, you're saying?
The Chronicles.
Yeah, I really did.
The way he really honored people. And the way he wrote about Dave Van Ronk, I wish Dave had been around.
He called him a mountain of a man. He stood over the street.
He wrote four big, long passages about Dave, and he really nailed Dave's majesty. And he just makes me cry when I've reread it many times. And I've even tried to read it publicly, and I always get to the end, and I can hardly get it out because it chokes me up so much. Bob really, really got the way Dave, did it, and the four different passages are in
different spots, different styles,
different parts. One was the first time he met him, which was a very funny sort of thing, and another time it was when Dave was
the Folklore Center when he met him, right?
And when he was, and then just describing, and then another time is like being in his apartment and Dave is just giving opinion about this, all this and this, and then being the opinion, and Bob is trying to say, well, I think he's pretty good. Well, nah, he's no good. You know, it's just like it's just great the way he pulls it off.
Susie Rutello writes about Folk City in her book, Free Will.
That's a great book.
Yeah.
That is a great
book. Yeah, me and Bob are in that book. We love that book.
I admired that book a great deal. And what was great, too, was like she didn't even mention Bob until page 90.
Because
it was a whole scene.
I'm on 161. Yeah. I went to see her.
Yeah.
Reed. We had a great get together.
Uh-huh. Susie Rodolo.
I hadn't seen her since 63.
Yeah.
Okay?
You're on the air.
Hey guys, calling back. Just something real fast. A lot of names mentioned. A lot of memories. But I just wanted to mention one that I haven't heard. But maybe you've said it. That is Dave Van Ronk, the mayor.
We were just talking.
We've been talking about him all night.
Yeah. I know. I was in and out. Sorry, Dave. And if you wanted to play Cocaine or Dink Song, I would love that in honor of Dave.
No guitars here tonight.
I played that for some steel workers in Pittsburgh in 75.
Did you?
I was hanging out with the United Steelworkers Union and doing like that movie I Led Three Lives, that TV show. Huh. You know, I always felt like I was like a spy. You know, and I still feel like I'm a spy, but I've gotten better at it. But I played them Cocaine that album, and then I played them Kinky Friedman new album Texas Jew Boy. That was a real stretch for them, man. Rodham, Jew Boy, and
that was almost like.
And then I put Dave Van Ronk on immediately after, so they could go back to America, you know, because
Dave's versions of both those songs are classic. And I don't know if you saw this season's FX. What is that doctor thing? What's that doctor thing who? About? No. The plastic surgeons.
Nip and Tuck.
They had a great episode where, I don't know, some guy had like done so much cocaine his nose was basically gone. I mean, Dave's version, actually he made up several verses. I went to bed last night singing a song. Woke up this morning and my nose was gone.
Just a memory.
Dave added several funny verses to that. But in the television show, he's like working on the nose, trying to build him up another nose, and all of a sudden this guitar comes on. I go to myself.
No way.
I say to myself, I say, be still my heart. Be still my heart, because that sounds like Dave's version. That sounds like Dave's guitar, and it gets on it, and it goes through the verse because he does a nice intro, and then all of a sudden, bless their hearts, Dave's voice comes. And so they had Dave singing Cocaine while he's operating on this guy's nose, trying to build him up a new nose. And bless their heart.
That's funny.
And I was so proud of them. That somebody there was smart enough to use Dave's version.
So, Cocaine.
All around my blame.
You're on the air too. Hi. Hello.
Hey.
Morning.
I was wondering if you guys remember a band that used to play New Year's Eve at Folk City, the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I heard they broke up, and one of them moved to Binghamton and stuff. And then Andy Breckman used to open for them, and now he's writing for like David Letterman and Saturday Night Live and stuff like that. But
actually, you know what he's doing now? That series Monk was his series.
Yeah, Monk.
He created Monk.
Right, that's right.
So he went on from David Letterman. He was a great guy to be around. He was he used to come to the Hoots and do the funniest songs. He was a fun guy too. Eric Franson and I went over and watched some show with him once.
You're on the air too.
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, this is Cloudy.
Yes, Cloudy.
So, people want to discuss any politics, or they only want to discuss about the music scene?
Well, we're talking about the anniversary of Gertie's, which was a pretty important place, I guess. It was quite political in its
folk.
In
has
its
always
way,
been
yeah.
political.
Yeah,
I mean, always
that's
been political.
Way back in the 20s.
Defines
century.
It.
I did do
Sorry.
Sorry.
Somebody pushed the wrong button. So
yeah.
Sorry about that.
But yeah, I've been asking people what.
Oh well, call back.
I've been asking people what
call
the what the political climate did to their music as they were writing it too. You know, I mean, and it intertwines with their writing intertwined with the sentiment on the street from the people who are listening. There's no extricating the themes of that day from the music of that day, and especially the early 60s. I mean, with Cuba, with Kennedy, with
Phil Oakes,
civil rights, Phil Oakes,
Glenn Chandler,
right.
Yep. One of the most memorable concerts I can recall, and I wasn't there, but I've seen the video, it was at Folk City, I believe. Bob, you would know this. It was Phil Oakes, Pat Sky, and Dave Van Ronk all on the same bill.
Wow.
Around 1975, I think.
Oh,
and there's a video of that. I know the person who has the only copy,
that.
And I'd love to see that again.
Phil Oakes was a big influence on me, too. When I came up, it was about 76, and he had just gone on, and so and later on I recorded Crucifixion for a Phil Oakes album type thing, and really admired that particular song and many songs. And the thing about his things are they haven't a lot of times you do the political thing they don't stand the test of time, but his do. His really do. I really
just a few minor changes.
That.
It's all over.
Mm-hmm. I thought Bob was sort of indicating maybe I should do that song we were talking about, Great American Dream, and that has some political undertones into it. And I thought I'd do a version for you. I was a big Woody Guthrie person, and when I wrote this song, I thought maybe I had written my Woody Guthrie song. Excuse me, sir, I am a foreigner. I left the white sands of Zanzibar. Where is this place you call Free Lunch Bar? I'm hungry and have overstayed my visa.
I work your farm, your factory, your pizzeria. Is TV more beautiful than the Mona Lisa? Someday my sons will fight for the eagle. My daughters will never be ashamed of me. It is my dream to be a citizen. It's the great American dream. It's the great American dream. It's the great American dream. Excuse me, sir, I am a carpenter. Once I built a treehouse for Rockefeller. Though now I've been laid off since December. Someday I'll build a farm all my own. The best lazy boy throne. In every room a different color phone. These torn hands are skilled as spiders. And I hear there's work in Kansas building coffins. It is my dream. It's the great American dream. It's the great American dream. It's the great American dream. Excuse me, sir, I am an Indian. Excuse me, sir, I am a prostitute. Just pretend that I'm a playboy bunny. For a Franklin, I will tongue your tummy. My body is a battlefield and a flower. 47 tricks by the hour. Oh, the many men, one might have been my father. Someday my sons will fight for the eagle. My daughters will never be ashamed of me. It is my dream to be a girl again. In the great American dream. In the great American dream. In the great American dream. Excuse me, sir, I am every man. I'm the good thief of Jekyll and Hyde. I'm the social climber on a mountain of pride. I'm the deaf, the dumb, and the debonair. I'm the mouse, the monk, and the millionaire. I'm the great white hope riding on an old gray mare. I'm a sad-eyed girl as young as the earth. I'm the mother who died giving birth to the great American dream. To the great American dream. To the great American dream. I love freedom. I hope freedom loves me.
I'd like to take a second and talk about an historical context, because I used to get interviewed a lot about the origin of the 60s, and one day I went back that the 60s began right after World War II, and I weaved myself up like in the late 40s, music and theater and poetry and dance and literature all began to stretch into a new form. Came bebop and a lot of wonderful things were happening in the late 40s, and all of a sudden came the Red Scare, and a lot of this went underground. People got frightened. I remember talking to Judith Molina about doing theater in the early 50s. She said we just couldn't come out and say it.
Yeah.
We had to find some classical piece that said the same thing to get away with it. So they had to like cool the originality for that time. But when Allen Ginsberg wrote Howl and Rosa Parks sat in the front of the bus or anywhere on the bus, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, and the new form of bebop and this beginning of this folk music thing all happened simultaneously. It was radical theater, poetry, and folk music, which I always felt was the best of America. It was a synthesis of the history of immigration and slavery, because there was all that stuff in the Black South. There was also folk music, which they called the blues. Like we were listening to Fats Waller earlier before you guys came, you know. Mm-hmm. All that part that came out of the... there's an historical context of up and down. And where are we now? I just throw that in, you know.
It's interesting.
We're kind of underground again, because, you know, there's millions of poets now all over the world and all over America, and people doing theater and getting turned on and buzzed and waiting for this new culture. You know, I made this poster. It said, danger, no culture. You know? It's just, we talk about culture. And I just Bob knows the story. I was playing in Dusseldorf a few years ago, and I get interviewed by Dusseldorf Radio, and the guy says, so, Steve, what will you be doing when you go back to America? And I said, I'm working on the cha. He says, what? I said, I'm working on the cha. He says, pardon me, Steve, but what is a cha? I said, in America, we got cult. We need culture. and young people really respond to that line.
Yeah.
I've found that, you know. And we're, you know.
It's hip. It's hip.
It's hip. It's about hip. It's about
that being.
It's about hip is cool.
Hip is always
good.
Hip is never. Never ages. Hip
yeah,
never
except
ages.
When you get to him.
I also wanted to say, again, because sometimes we forget, the June 7th is going to be that Folk City anniversary day.
Maybe the day.
The 50th anniversary. And so all these great people are going to be showing up. And
bringing
we'll probably
it all back
mention
home, right?
Willie Nile, who was around that time, Rod McDonald. I'm going to be there. David Massengill, Jack Hardy. I heard Mark Johnson might come up. Mark Johnson,
yeah,
what was
that? I remember Mark.
And Vince Martin, Eric Franson, Bev Grant, Bernie Shanahan from the old days, Danny Cow, boy, that's great.
Cal, Jonathan Cow, too.
And Peter Stanfeld. Now, boy, I tell you.
Week.
Talk
yep.
about
Steve. Yeah, you can go
Peter,
to
Peter Stanfeld, and he's still doing great stuff.
He was here last week.
Yeah, he was here not long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to Folk City at 50, one word, 50, spell it out, folkcityat50.blogspot.com. It's just sort of an informal website that I'm just throwing things out there. I haven't officially posted all these names, but they're pretty much set as far as attending and playing, and hopefully we'll build up from the 20 that Dave just read to
more,
and it's definitely going to be
a real blast.
We're going to, we're going to have a recording, and I also went to that site that you did, Bob, the Kickstart, and so I can't really say, you know, go to Kickstart and look us up just yet, but likely we're going to have to the point where it's going to be a free show. You know, all these names, historical
and historical one time, only time, unreplicated lineup where everybody's going to be there performing in one night, the first time ever that some of these people will meet with each other. Certainly the first time that some of the old guard will meet some of the new guard. And there it is for free right there on 130 West 3rd, June 7th of this year. So it's sure to be a really good time. And I'm just hoping that it's a way to get all these people exposed to a new crowd and themselves again, a reunion of massive proportions.
This has nothing to do with nostalgia.
Yeah.
This has nothing, because this the movement that we are historically, whether you want to go back to 1870 Paris or the early days
it's
of
the
Russian Revolution,
it's the same, you're right.
It's always the future. And I used to have a show called Nostalgic for the Future, where I said to the audience, I'm talking about all the great comic attractions from the past. The movie wasn't as good as the coming attractions, okay? Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, we are, and we have a continuity. And so when people throw out that nostalgia line, it's not about nostalgia. It's always about the future. And all those so-called cliches like, keep it on, man, and all those. But it is about that. Yeah. It's about saving humanity. Oh, we have a little gig here. What are you doing today? I'm saving humanity. We're getting as many people involved as possible. I know it's not a hot tune on the street. It's kind of a lot of wars going on, and torture and exploitation.
But
that goes on always. But we know what we have to do. We have to exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely. Definitely
continuity
worth getting out and just keeping it going. Exactly.
That website one more time.
The website is thank you, folkcityat50.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. So just spell out Folk City at 50. And you can go to, there's a public page on Facebook. You don't have to be a member, but there's also a public page where you can probably Google that a little easier. Face Down at Folk City. That has an awful lot of pictures, and a lot of awful pictures, but an awful lot of pictures of the days at West 3rd mostly. But that also has a lot of names that if you wanted to go and chime in and see who's who and who's chiming in. And there are a lot of people that I've been able to contact thanks to Facebook, believe it or not. It's an account that I had myself that I let be dormant for 3 years, just didn't go at all. Found out about the public page at Folk City, Folk City. Went there and found all kinds of people. David was one of those people who were on there, but I found you otherwise. But it was a way for me to connect with all these folks, and I can't explain how overwhelmingly positive everyone has just been to not only me, but the concept of getting together again, the concept of just continuing to talk about what it was and what it is, what Folk City was and what
Jose Feliciano.
Jose Feliciano is one of the first people that I've connected with since I decided to do this book. And oddly enough, Jose Feliciano, Jack Hardy, Bobby Dylan, and Rod McDonald. There are some people that spent private time with Mike Porco. A lot of times, it was all in Folk City, any contact that people did have, that the musicians had at least with Mike. But there were a select few that were able to spend some time with him after hours or closing time or whatever. But Feliciano was one of those guys that Mike took under his wing.
I didn't know that.
Feliciano started there at 64. Is that the date there? He might have been 63. He was a teenager. And would come in with a seeing eye dog.
Wow.
63, yeah.
Mike bought him winter clothes. He used to take the subway from, he lived in the Bronx, I think. So he used to take the subway for his guitar lessons, et cetera. And he would show up in the village and be a little underdressed. And Mike felt bad for him, would give him some hand-me-downs.
Wow.
And Jose and he's remained friends until later on. And there's one story that... is part of family folklore that my father always tells, that there was a tale that this was with Jose's first wife, not his current wife.
Hilda.
And I'm sorry?
Her name was Hilda.
Right, Hilda. So there was something where they were going to meet up. Jose was living in Connecticut, and it was, you know, it was not a day that Mike was at the club, apparently. So he's on the phone, and they're sort of third-personing each other. Somebody's on the phone with Hilda, and Hilda's shouting back to Jose and whatever, you know, how long does it take us to get to your place, Mike? Or how long does it take you to get to us, I think it was. And Mike said, it'll probably take me about, you know, maybe a 25 minutes to get to you. And he says, you know what? Jose gets on the phone. He says, you know what? Why don't we come to you? It'll just be easier. We have to go up to, you know, somewhere else in Manhattan later on. So we'll just come to you. We'll be there in 20 minutes. And he says, he's like, Jose, I just told you it was 25 minutes. And Jose says, well, I'm driving. And when I did meet Jose, it was just this past December 28th at the Iridium. I just, you know, I'm in the Village Voice looking at ads and trying to find where people are, if anybody's around. And there he was playing with the Les Paul Trio. So right away I got tickets. My father happened to be in town from Florida. And we went to see him. And I name-dropped my way backstage in between sets. And he welcomed us back there, you know, and started talking immediately about Mike's lasagna and how he would serve it up. You know, he would have the kitchen. The kitchen was defunct in West Third. It was functional, but it wasn't. They didn't serve food out of the West Third facility, but there would be pans of food made, you know, spaghetti and whatever else for the staff and for the musicians who were around early enough at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And he would talk about that and. You look at my father. Oh, you look like Mike a little bit, you know. And here I was just starting to contact people about doing interviews. So we're excusing ourselves, and I said to Jose, and making eye contact with his wife Susan. I said, should I be contacting you or Phyllis, who was Jose's agent or is? And, you know, should I contact you or Phyllis about the interview? And Jose shouts out, no, call me at home. You know, he gets a card out, call me at home. So, you know, it's just that's the way it's been for me to be welcomed into people's worlds. Richie Havens was my first interview. He calls me on my cell phone. Hey, it's Richie, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so just things like that have just been a testament to who Mike was. And it's made my job a lot easier, and that's why all these people are very unreluctantly coming out of wherever they are to come to perform and giving me feedback and giving me interviews and talking stories about the old days. But I do have some information about Mike and his days before 1960. I don't want to keep chatting on here, but
before you do, let me remind people. This is WBAI in New York City, and we're also heard on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York. Almost forgot to say we're streaming on the World Wide Web. We can be...
The interweb.
Heard around the world.
Internets.
The interweb.
By the way, will this event be streamed?
No, we won't be streaming at this point.
I don't even know what streaming is.
We'd be having video there.
We're gonna definitely record as much as we possibly can.
I don't have a cell phone, so I'm really behind everything.
Oh yeah, you're one of the.
I play a mountain dulcimer. That's what I do.
We did a benefit for Tuli Kupferberg from the Fugs a couple of weeks ago, and for those who couldn't go, they put on their computer and saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
And some of them send in checks and money orders.
That's nice.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. Yeah, we're gonna have to black it out like the NFL does. You know, we want people to come down.
I wish they would block out most television. I wish they would give me like 17 channels that I can watch instead of the 5,000 that I can't.
You know, I have zero, so I'm
good fireplace.
Completely different. But yeah, we're going to be definitely recording it, having a couple of videographers there, and hopefully putting something together within the next year that
to bring my kid there when he was 5 years old and his friends.
Baba.
Yeah, that's when I was there. That's my memory of Folk City. I was standing on the bar telling naughty jokes. But
don't do that, Rolando. You know you should never swat a fly, because he may have another fly, and he may sit with her, and he may sigh, just the way I do with you. That's right. And you know you should never ever harm a flea, because he may have a favorite she, a little flea she, that he bouncy, wouncy, wounces on his little flea knee, just the way I do with you, Rolando. And you know you should never harm a bee if he is going anywhere. Because you know, you could be concluding, you could be ending, you could be busting up some terrific insect family love affair. Be careful. Now look, don't you slug a bug, or approach a roach, or stick a tick, or torpedo a mosquito, or bug a slug in the middle of a rug, because, you know, all these hairy little insects may want to share a hug, just the way that I do with you. Yeah. Never swat a fly, he may have another fly, he may sit with her and sigh the way I do with you. Never harm a flea, he may have a favorite she, that he bounces on his knee the way I do with you. Never harm a bee if he is going anywhere. You may be concluding some dark family love affair. Be careful, don't you slug a bug in the middle of a rug. He may want to share a hug the way I do with you. La 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 thank you.
once again. Time to say so long and so we call the roll of life. La, 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 la. You're going home now. Well, home's that place somewhere you go each day to see your wife, yeah. Make things all
right. Maybe we can have some more poetry, David.
Pretty. I've been writing a lot of songs about animals and insects lately. I don't know why.
They're going to save us, man. That's why.
I wish it was a caterpillar. You know, when I started doing that song, I thought I would end up, you know, as a butterfly being glad. But when I finally ended up as a butterfly, I was disappointed. I wanted to be a caterpillar again. It was interesting when you know, you're kind of surprised. Every artist has to surprise themselves. If they don't, then...
Right. It's butterfly. No more changes left,
yeah,
for a butterfly.
Yeah.
But a caterpillar has great changes. And
potential.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they get to eat all day, too. So.
And they sleep in silk.
Yes. Yes, that's wonderful.
That's true.
That's very poetic. Sleep in silk. I might take that with me tonight.
Yours,
use it.
It's yours.
I'll use it somehow, I hope. I might as well do this thing. I did this little song because I visited Jack Hardy's place 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. He was in Italy, and he gave me the run of his place, and I was hoping the door was unlocked, and it was. It's out in the country, and when I woke up in the morning, I found this little creature, this little mouse that had died, and I knew. I was by myself. I didn't have anybody to make fun of me, so I decided this creature deserved a nice send-off. So I decided to give him a little burial in the garden, and I just went all out for this little mouse. This is called Ode to a Mouse. Thing we were both guests of the house. Mouse, mouse, that's your part, everybody. Mouse, mouse. My friend was away but left his door unlocked, though by force of habit politely I knocked. Then I went inside to make use of the house and discovered, alas, a poor drowned mouse. Mouse, mouse. I picked up the mouse by its wee tiny tail. Its wee hands and feet were piteously frail. that I mourn a stranger, you may find it odd. Just as others may doubt a beneficent God. Mouse, mouse, I fashioned a cross out of cornstalk and twine. Right there in the garden I built a small shrine. Though my choice of coffin was unorthodox, as I tucked the mouse in a Cracker Jack box. Mouse, mouse, I hope when I die there will be someone there who, though they don't know me, will tenderly care. The funeral procession was me and some birds. Though it may seem profane, I said a few words. I said, mouse, mouse, I buried a mouse that drowned in a commode. Though we weren't acquainted, I wrote it this ode. What we had in common, a man and a mouse. Well, for one thing, we were both guests of the house last time. Mouse, mouse, hey.
Without art, we wouldn't have made it to the 8th century.
Robert Burns, of course, wrote a beautiful little poem, To a Mouse, and that's where that great phrase of all the schemes of mice and men come from. And if you go on the internet, you can on YouTube, you can see people reading that that poem. It's about a farmer who upsets a mouse as he's digging the field. He upsets a mouse's little home. And,
I've upset some mice because they've upset me.
Yes.
They come around my house once in a while and say, listen, man,
yeah.
I'm trying to be a nonviolent man. I have studied even with Mahatma Gandhi's grandson and read all them books. But I know you shouldn't be here, so I'll put down a warning on you. I want you to split. If you want, I'll leave a little piece of cheese and a piece of bread at the door, and you can take it with you, but I want you mice out of here because I got to do what I got to do, and please don't make me do it because I'll feel terrible.
I know.
Because I got that from my mother, you know? I remember my mother, no matter who died, I mean, even when Rockefeller died, I mean, I felt bad, you know? I couldn't believe it, you know? I felt just awful. That people say, why does it feel bad that Rockefeller died? I said, I got that from my mother, because no matter who died, my mother would say, oi, oi, ooh, him? Oi, 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 oi. We're going to have to eat out tonight. So that's what I tell the mice that story.
When my dad showed me how to fish and he showed me how to put a worm on a hook, I felt so sorry for that worm. And yet, I was worried the worm was going to get off, so I put it on like three or four times. That poor thing.
This is the way it is so far.
But when I found that mouse at Jack's place, I reacted differently than I would at my own apartment. Because
sure.
At my apartment, I go, oh, gee, I got to get rid of the mice. And, you know, everybody's had that. But when I was at Jack's, and it had drowned. And I literally, I mean, my heart went out to it. And when I picked it up by its tail, I was looking at the little hands and the little feet. They were so tiny and so detailed. And I just, something in me just went, I reacted differently. And and I literally, you know, buried it. I didn't put it in a Cracker Jack box. That was the one affectation that I put in the song.
You're a liar.
When I said unorthodox, I said, what rhymes with unorthodox? And Cracker Jack box came up, you know. And so that's the only thing in the song that is actually of a false nature. And I don't know why I'm telling you that. I shouldn't.
I'm broken. Dave.
Whenever I visit Jack, I go out, and I did make a little cross with a twine, and Jack went out and took a picture of it because I left a note on his desk, and he went out to the garden, found it, and took a little picture. And so whenever I visit Jack out there, I go out. Of course, it's washed away now. But I sing that song a cappella to the mouse when I go out there. Every time I go out there, I sing the song. I say, hey, mouse, I'm going to sing your song to you.
Fantastic.
And I have a nice little thing. It's, you know.
There was a piece done by John Kalish on NPR about Thule's views on killing a mouse, too.
Yeah.
You got to do
Thule used to warn the cockroaches.
Yeah. The cockroaches, rather, yeah.
Thule won the cockroaches.
The lowly cockroaches.
Ah, yes.
I'm a pacifist, man, so, like, go, man.
You'll have to do that at the 50th, David. It's going to be probably two or three songs per person, but maybe more, maybe less. But if we have enough time, we'll go around the horn twice. And
everybody does one the second time around.
Yeah, one the second time around, yeah. And it'll be the Uber hoot. You know, yeah. We're going to have 20 some odd people, hopefully.
Great.
I keep saying hopefully, but I feel real confident that we'll have at least 24 performers on June 7th on West 130 West 3rd.
Yeah.
Sure, we can
for
make
the
a promo.
Folk City at 50. What's that?
Sure, you could probably make a promo that BAI can play. You know.
Yeah.
I think that could happen.
Yeah, I'm a one man show right now, so you know. Yeah. I'm working on it.
You know, you got to get a 30 second spot, and I'm sure they'll play it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's great continuity with Folk City and WBAI.
Right. Yeah, everybody who went through there came here over, you know, definitely share this space too.
Bob would say, what you doing this weekend? And they'd say, I'm working in Folk City.
Yeah, it was definitely a bastion of creativity there. Everybody went and performed and played.
You know, I used to like do a lot more drinking. I just for some reason I just don't like to drink as much as I used to. I still enjoy it, but I used to. One time I went into Folk City and I didn't know what I did because it was one of those times where they told you the next day that I went into Folk City and I went up and down the bar and I told every single person at the bar up and down I told them that I hated them. In no uncertain terms,
yeah.
But they saw that I was blitzed, and so everybody just sort of like they didn't take it personally, and I didn't get kicked out, and I didn't get hit, and you know they took care of it. Mike was there, and Mike, you know, and I was going, how in the world am I going to go back in there? How is Mike gonna, you know, is he gonna forgive me? But like he totally forgave me, so I was going, oh, I can't go back in. You mean I did that? I told everybody that I hated them. I couldn't believe it.
I went downstairs to the little room.
Yeah.
And in that little room, I went.
With whom?
With a number of people. And one day, I'm down there with my cousin, and I'm going, and I took my shirt off because it was hot, and I went. And then somebody came down and said, 5 minutes, Steve, and I'm wondering, where's my shirt? And my cousin, it was hot, so my cousin was leaning up there, and he was also going. And I said, where's my shirt? We're looking, and he turns around, is that my shirt was sticking to his back because it was so hot.
Nice.
I went into this incredible paddock. I can't go on stage without a shirt.
You know, there are a couple of stories about how Folk City actually came about. The main one, obviously, is that Izzy Young approached him in December of 1959, but you know what was said and by whom is left to debate between certain people. But before it was the Fifth Peg, Mike did have a couple of acts there every once in a while, and the story goes that you know, you had some jazz performers there,
Book Irwin,
downstairs smoking it up, and you know, they said, "Oh, Mike, you know, you got guys smoking marijuana down in the basement. You want the cops coming in here? If you have jazz performers coming in here all the time, you're eventually asking for trouble. You know, you know what you need to do. You got to get these folkies in here to start playing. I mean, they're kind of clean cut kids. They're, you know, their drug of choice is alcohol, and you got the liquor's license. And
So that was encouragements that Mike got to bring music into Folk City.
Then Pot came back to Folk City.
Pot came back.
Pot returns to Folk City.
The 60s was the 60s, but back then it was 72. This was the pre-hippie 60s.
Yeah, I know. I remember Booker Irwin used to play there a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be coming back next week, and it's almost time for us to get out of here. I saw Ahmed Ali, who is going to be coming in to do In the Moment with Ibrahim Gonzalez. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, thanks
great.
So much. For
an honor to be up. With you.
Absolutely.
Oh, well. Come on. And like I say, we'll be back next week. Bill Propp, thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks,
Bill. Steve Israel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Bob Porco and David Massengill, who sang some wonderful songs.
Nice. Yeah,
these Southern boys. These Southern boys like David, man.
Yeah.
Bring a whole
Southern.
Whole other rhythm up to us New Yorkers.
So once again, let me just say, June 7th of this year, not long from now, 130 West 3rd, Folk City at 50.blogspot.com. And please come out. Please encourage all your cohorts who remember Folk City. And
now that you got email.
And even if you don't, if you just want to hear the professionals sing the professional songs, come on out.
Palheiro humilde e tosco. Santa Maria das Dores, Mãe de Deus, se for pecado. Santa Maria das Dores, Mãe de Deus, se for pecado, tocar-me cantar o fado. Me rogai por nós pecadores, tocar e cantar o fado, rogai por nós pecadores. Nenhum fadista tem sorte, rogai por nós, Virgem Mãe. Nenhum fadista tem sorte, rogai por nós, Virgem Mãe. Agora se na hora da nossa morte, agora sempre e também na hora da nossa morte.
Turtle dove done drooped his wings. Turtle dove done drooped his wings. Turtle dove done drooped his wings. Went on to Zion and hell to sing. Adam and Eve, oh no. Adam and Eve, don't you tell it to me. Meet me at the door, don't tell it to me. Sa-sa-la-do and sa-la-sa-ri. My name is written on David's line. My name is written on David's line.
On David's line.
My name is written on David's line. I'm going to heaven on the wheel of time. Adam and Eve, oh no. Adam and Eve, don't you tell it to me. Meet me at the door, don't tell it to me. Sa-sa-la-do and sa-la-sa-ri. When I get to heaven, I know the rules.
I know the rules.
When I get to heaven, I know the rules.
I know the rules.
When I get to heaven, I know the rules. Keep going down to the bathing pool. Adam and Eve, oh no. Adam and Eve, don't you tell it to me. Meet me at the door, don't tell it to me. Sa-sa-la-do and sa-la-sa-ri. Turtle dove done drooped his wings.
Done drooped his wings.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.